This is Cincinnati Edition. On 91.7 WVXU, I'm Michael Monks. Valentine's Day has a lot of us thinking about love, how we're enjoying it, or how we're missing out on it. Coming up, a look at the most romantic places to go for Valentine's Day in Cincinnati and Northern Kentucky, plus the ease and difficulty of being single in Cincinnati. Our guests will break that down, and we want to hear your comments too, so be prepared to give us a call at 513-419-7100. You can also email your comments to talk at WVXU.org or look us up on Facebook or Twitter. We'll be looking for your comments and your tweets, some of which may be shared during the show. But first, a look at the other side of that coin. When you're alone and lonely, there may actually be medical dangers to consider. And did you know that a broken heart is a very real thing? Joining Cincinnati Edition now to talk about those issues are Assistant Professor of Psychiatry and Behavioral Neuroscience at the University of Cincinnati, Dr. Aaron Thace. Thanks for joining us in the studio, Dr. Thace.
Yep, glad to be here.
And on the phone, Professor of Medicine and Director of the Division of Cardiovascular Health and Diseases at the University of Cincinnati, Dr. Richard Becker. Thanks for joining us, Dr. Becker.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
Again, if you have comments or questions, give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk at WVXU.org or look us up on Facebook or Twitter. Dr. Thace, I want to start with you. Dr. Guy Winch wrote at Psychology Today several years ago that, quote, loneliness is a personal and subjective experience, one which is defined not by the quantity of our relationships, but by their subjective quality. So I guess he's saying that it doesn't matter how many relationships you have, whether they be personal, friendly, or romantic, but how deep those relationships are and how meaningful they are. Is that something you would agree with?
Yes, for sure. I think that people can feel lonely with no one around them and with a giant group around them. I mean, there's a lot of research and people that within marriages, they can feel lonely even though they have that person that they're spending their life with, or they can have a massive group of friends or individuals they spend time with and still have that feeling of loneliness because you're lacking that sense of connection and deeper connection with other people. So I definitely think it's a pervasive feeling that people have at all different stages of their life.
Yeah. So in your practice and in your research, what would you say constitutes like a meaningful and deep relationship? Or is that more of a personal situation varying from person to person?
I think it definitely is individualized. It's finding people that you can connect with on a deeper level, whether that's through shared experiences or like-minded values, or someone that you feel like you can be more emotionally vulnerable with and have a social connection with that goes past some of those surface-level types of interactions that you have with them. And I think it's hard for people sometimes to find those individuals in their social networks. And I think it's also difficult to combat the tendencies of thoughts that we have go through our heads where we question these social interactions at times as to whether they're genuine or not, that can kind of feed into our feelings of loneliness too.
So loneliness is something that can make people feel marginalized and deepening that feeling of aloneness. So is there any medical evidence that feelings of loneliness can lead to behavior that further entraps us in that loneliness?
Yeah, I think similar to other types of mental health, it can really have a snowball effect because what happens is you start to have these thought patterns, let's say, that you feel like you don't have people that understand you and don't have a connection with anybody in your life socially, no matter the amount of people. And then you start to build these what we call schemas or narratives in your head and expectations that other people don't want to spend time with you and that they don't like being around you. And you start to pick up on nonverbal cues that may or may not be there. And other people, it's been shown in terms of evidence, that they can pick up when people are lonely. So we start to not want to be around people that are exuding loneliness, which feeds into everything else and starts to cause behaviors like isolating yourself more and not reaching out to friends and kind of becomes this vicious cycle that happens.
Socializing should be so much easier, don't you think?
It should. We should just be able to put ourselves in a group of people and feel better. It would be great if that worked.
Dr. Becker, let's bring you in. We wanted to do this show close to Valentine's Day because we wanted to discuss matters of the heart, the symbolic heart. But it turns out that the symbolic heart can trigger actual feelings and problems for the physical heart. Specifically, I'm talking about a broken heart. This is something people can actually physically experience. Can you describe that for us?
Yes, it's been known for a number of years now, actually going back to 1990, that extremes of emotional or physical stress actually can affect the heart and cause either a stunning or a type of hibernation or occasionally injury of the heart.
Wow. So sometimes, we've heard broken heart many times in our lives. So sometimes when we lose, say, like a grandparent, and then soon after the other grandparent passes away, or sometimes you hear that phrase with pets, he or she died of a broken heart. So is that an actual thing? Is it deadly?
It is an actual thing, even though it's not common. It could be one in 1,000, one in 10,000 individuals. But it can happen when someone has an emotional trigger, such as severe panic, fear, internal conflicts, or anger. But it also could follow a medical illness, such as an infection, car accident, having a stroke, having a seizure, and the commonality seems to be a very high level of adrenaline circulating in the body that can affect the heart for a period of time.
All right, Dr. Becker, we're going to check back with you. Dr. Thace, last year, the Washington Post reported on a study by the health company Cigna, and it found that young adults between the ages of 18 and 22 are the loneliest generation of Americans. And that seems counter to what we might think because we hear so much about digital connectivity. Nobody knows how to use like these new apps or these social sites better than young people. So what is causing that generation to be so lonely, even more so than the nation's elderly?
Yeah, I think there are a lot of factors that go into it. I think electronically, what's interesting about a lot of the social media apps is it's giving us a false sense of connection because it ends up being more of a like a stop station to look at other people's lives and not a place to make plans. So a lot of times it's been helpful for people when you're able to like go on Twitter or go on different kinds of social media platforms and like make plans to meet later. But when all you're doing is using them to feel like you're connected with people without making any plans, all it really makes you feel like is like, here are all these stories or information that I'm watching of a bunch of other people living a life that they didn't invite me to. And this is where we just start to have those innate reactions as humans because we want to have social interaction. It's a basic need of ours that we feel that urge to, well, here's what I don't have. And I think a lot of times some of the dating platforms and all those things have been helpful because you use them to make deeper connections and make plans with people. But when it's just to look at other people's lives, I think reactively and instinctually, it causes us to feel like we're missing out and it's not a true connection. Not a lot of people feel like they skimmed all of their social media feeds and feel more connected. They just feel like they gain more information about somebody else's life that they're not involved in.
So it's just really opening up more doors for us to see how other people are living and then to compare ourselves to
exactly.
those lives. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Again, socializing should be a little more easy.
It should
be easier.
Yeah. And sometimes using those platforms to make plans with people or ways to use it as a starting point to reconnect can be helpful.
But with people you already know.
With people you already know, right. But if you're just using it as a place to look at other people and kind of see what you're not doing, then it can end up feeling lonelier than the expectation.
Dr. Becker, back to you. What are some of the symptoms that you would point to if you were working to identify broken heart syndrome or what you call stress-induced cardiomyopathy in a patient? What are some of those symptoms?
Yes. Actually, the symptoms are very similar to those of a heart attack.
Oh.
Chest discomfort, shortness of breath, dizziness, lightheadedness, the person can pass out. And under those circumstances, of course, we encourage people to seek out medical help. And in the process of evaluation, this is a diagnosis that is made through a series of tests. Could be an electrocardiogram, some blood tests, and then a definitive test like a heart MRI.
if the strain on the heart is coming from an emotional situation, such as a breakup or the loss of a loved one, are there actions that can be taken to help heal that?
Yes. I mean, here's the good news. In a majority of cases of the stress-induced cardiomyopathy or a broken heart, the features of a weakened heart are reversible in a period of weeks to months. So with appropriate evaluation and medical care and medications, the majority of individuals will actually return to a normal state.
Okay. And Dr. Thace, on loneliness, has garnered some pretty significant headlines in recent years. Last year, the New York Times published an opinion piece questioning whether loneliness was tearing America apart. The article was in response to the book by U.S. Senator Ben Sasse, a Republican from Nebraska. That book is called Them, Why We Hate Each Other and How to Heal. Senator Sasse concludes in that book that loneliness is killing us. And then the writer of the Times response, Arthur C. Brooks, he stated in that article, quote, "One reason is the changing nature of work. Work is one of the key sources of friendship and community, yet the reality of the workplace is rapidly attenuating as people hop from job to job and from city to city, as steady work becomes harder to find, and the gig economy grows." Do you find truth in that? Is there something in, like, transiency that's hurting our ability to connect?
I think there's some reality to that. I think there's also the reality of the constant expectation, at least in the American culture, to always work more, that we put a lot of value on the amount of time that we put into work and kind of this that you can never put enough hours into it. So I think along with what he's saying, it feeds into just how we prioritize our lives. And a lot of times our priority becomes work and functioning and don't really see socialization or interpersonal relationships or getting out and meeting people or dating or whatever your goals are, as we actually need to make time to prioritize that. So then we make decisions based on our work or our professional life that end up being going to different places, taking a different job, and push maybe some other things that would be just as important to the side. And it does become more difficult. There's a reality of the more you change jobs, the more you move to different cities and different places, you are having to reacclimate to every new environment that you are in. And there is a part of becoming closer in friendships or relationships that takes time. And sometimes if you keep going places, you don't have enough time to really build those connections.
So what are you finding in your practice or in your study about workplace relationships, whether they be friendly or platonic or just professional? How are those relationships evolving today as the workplace evolves itself? I mean, the workplace, as we just quoted from the New York Times, it's very different than it was several years ago. How are people's relationships in that environment evolving as well?
Yeah, I think what I tend to see is people are having different levels of different friendships and different prioritizations. So you might have some close friends that don't really know about anything you do at work, but they're friends that you do certain things with that you've known for 15 years. Or you have, if you work from home and you do something digitally, then you have friends that you talk with while you're at work and share stories about work, but they're not people that either you make plans with or are able to make plans with you. It seems like people more just have silos of groups of people in their life, depending on all of these different activities that we involve ourselves in. And I haven't seen as much of these just pervasive relationships that are able to exist across different environments, because we are just packing our schedule with so many different things and overscheduling ourselves. We don't give ourselves time or space to, like, actually spend time with people outside of their designated silos in our lives.
Are you finding that more people than before are wanting to discuss relationships in the workplace rather than other types of relationships? Are you seeing any growth in the number of requests for advice or perspective on that?
Yes, I think so. I think I've noticed an uptick in it, in the sense that probably issues that would have been discussed socially that you encounter outside of work, so I have these friends outside my work, we're having this issue, are now becoming issues that present themselves in work. So it may have been somebody that was more of a friendship that you're having issues with, or you found out they were talking about you behind your back that you didn't know about, that becomes more, that happens in the workplace scenario. And how are you handling it under the work setting? And I think that's what I've heard more about. And people trying to date in the work setting because that's the availability that is there. We're not going out as much. It's a lot of online apps and doing just kind of spending time at home. So it just does become a place where you're getting a significant amount of your social interactions. So that's when experiences, good or bad, are going to come up that you have to deal with.
Yeah, I'm guessing that social media, just like it does with loneliness, plays an impact on workplace relationships as well, because you might end up being Facebook friends with somebody that you work with, and then you learn some new things about them that you might not have otherwise gleaned from just everyday interaction at the water cooler. Or you may start to, you may have old coworkers from jobs 15 years ago who find you on Facebook and you connect with them there, and then your perspective on them may change.
Right. And I think it's an interesting thing that is happening now where relationships can go on forever or never really quite end. Like, you could break up with somebody and then continue to somehow have them in your lives through checking on their social media, or somebody you haven't talked to in 20 years from high school that you don't remember a lot about becomes your Facebook friend, and then you start a conversation and then it ends up, oh, I forgot all the reasons that we weren't friends anymore in the first place, but now you have a friendship with him and it brings up all of these things of how to end relationships, how to have appropriate boundaries with work friends, how much information people should know when it gets very messy.
Privacy settings are your friend.
Very true.
Dr. Becker, we know what a danger heart disease is to Americans, and that's true for a variety of reasons. And so we see a lot of messages reinforcing ways to take care of our hearts. So if someone is working to keep their heart healthy, are there ways to make it strong enough to withstand the impact of the broken heart, the cardio stress myopathy, or is the emotional toll stronger than the anticipation?
Well, actually, there are some potential risk factors for having a broken heart. And there are some of the risk factors that would apply to everyone. So that is a person who has high blood pressure, who has diabetes, a person that has a lot of stress in their life to begin with, or a person, as you've just been discussing, that doesn't have close friends, doesn't really have a support system in place, that's vulnerability. So we know that having strong relationships and friends and families and spouses and significant others actually does lead to improved heart health and does protect against some of the extremes that we've talked about, like a broken heart.
So I guess as a follow-up, you know, we are encouraged to exercise, we're encouraged to eat right, and that will make us healthy in a way that may stave off some of the dangers that affect people who maybe don't work out or who maybe eat poorly. So is there a way to build up any strength in the heart that, let's say, you get dumped? Is somebody who's in shape going to handle that physically better than somebody who's out of shape?
In all likelihood, we know that there are certain underlying predispositions for a broken heart syndrome, and that is having high blood pressure and other risk factors that we've discussed, and that being in better physical and emotional shape would offer some protection. What I will also say is that it's unusual for us to see a person with the broken heart syndrome that has it again and again and again, and that may be that after that initial event that they do subsequently have support systems, perhaps treatment that they needed previously, but it's rare to have recurring events.
And Dr. Thace, just to try to blend these two together, what role does a bad breakup or broken heart play in somebody's loneliness? Do you find that people have a hard time rebounding, bouncing back into the scene, or getting over people? What are some of the factors that play into that for people?
Yeah, I think similar to what Dr. Becker said, it's really about having that some kind of support system in place. And also what can be helpful, other than just having people that know you and care about you, is people that can understand the experience that you're going through and that this isn't individualized to you, that even though your heartbreak feels worse than anybody else's heartbreak in the entire world, that everybody has experienced some form of that in their lives, and helping to have people around you to just feel the feelings that come up. It would be great if we could skip over those, but really just getting yourself through it and knowing that you have people around you and that people in general that have felt these things and having those support systems in place to help you work through it.
So people who are feeling lonely, they might hear a very simple order from acquaintances or family members. Go out and make some friends, right? That's the answer. Go out and make some friends. Obviously, that's easier said than done. From your perspective, with all of these different options to connect with people, whether it be in the physical world or the digital one, is there a healthier environment to start one way or the other? Should these folks turn to digital sources, or is it as simple as go out and make some friends?
Yeah, it usually is not as simple as we would want it to just go put yourself around large groups of people. I think if you can start with some level of connections that you already have with people and build those. I also say we get a lot of feedback as individuals when we help others. So going and volunteering or going and helping a friend with something or helping a family member with something helps us to feel like we are contributing to that larger social environment as well. I think it's also important to find people that are connected with things that you enjoy. And that doesn't have to be 15 people. That can be one or two people. To feel like you have something to talk about helps to reduce a lot of that social anxiety that happens with people in new situations. And also working on not having those immediate assumptions about people and reaching out of your comfort zone and not assuming that people don't want to spend time with you. And that really just starting to reach out in whatever capacity is a good step. And of course, if you always want more guidance about that, or if you feel like it's at a place that you're not able to take those steps, then seeing a professional is the way to go. Yeah.
So what about expectations and mindset when you have the courage or the motivation to go out and try to make some friends to end this loneliness? Is there a certain level of expectation you should leave with, or is there a certain mindset that you should have? Like, I'm not going to leave with a best friend tonight, but I'm gonna achieve this goal while I'm at this place. What type of mindset or expectation should people have?
Yeah, so the best possible scenario is if you can just exist in the moment, but that's the goal for all of us on a regular basis, right?
Yeah.
But I think if you can go in more for a goal for yourself of I want to go and talk to 3 to 5 people, or I want to go and ask for 2 people's numbers. If it doesn't work out, that's okay. Or I'm going to reach out to 1 friend I haven't talked to in a long time. I'm just going to text them or send them a message or whatever, just to start that. And just the expectation of it's not your fault automatically if something doesn't happen. Like, try to build off facts rather than opinions or assumptions about scenarios and walk in just going, okay, but they could have plans. It doesn't mean I've done anything wrong. And try to just keep doing that repeatedly will help just build some of that strength going forward.
Dr. Thace and Dr. Becker, I want to thank both of you for joining us today to talk about loneliness and broken hearts. Great discussion. Thanks for being here.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Up next, a look at the best places for dates in Cincinnati and a conversation about how hard it might be to be single here. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Valentine's Day puts a lot of pressure on couples to come up with creative and romantic ideas for a special night out. So where are the best places for that? Joining me to talk about it are Wine Me, Dine Me writer and WVXU contributor Julie Neeson. Hey, Julie.
Hello. How are you?
And Date Night Cincinnati writer Carly Kortz. Welcome, Carly.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
And in a few minutes, we're bringing in a single person to talk about her experiences in the dating scene here. And we want to hear from you as well. If you know of a special or romantic place, or if you want to weigh in on the Cincinnati and Northern Kentucky dating scene, call us 513-419-7100. You can also email talk@wvxu.org. Look us up on Facebook or Twitter. We may be able to get some of your comments and your tweets into the show. All right, Carly, you're new to me. So tell me what Date Night Cincinnati is.
Yeah, so it was developed by Reach USA, which is the parent company to Reach Magazine. And it's basically a resource to plan a date night out. So you want to go to a new restaurant, but you don't know where, go Date Night Cincinnati. Or you're trying to do something a little bit different, go Date Night Cincinnati. You've got a lot of ideas for you. So it's basically just if you want to go out, like we have all the spots in Cincinnati for you to go to.
Okay. So when people turn to your site for ideas on dates in the city, what do you find to be the most popular types of articles? Which types of stories are resonating with couples who are looking for something fun to do?
Lately, it's been a lot of like cooking. And like lately, I've been sharing a lot of recipes that I've been finding online. But of course, we're kind of doing like a younger crowd, and millennials like are like trying to be more adult by like cooking at home, but also just like kind of trendy restaurants near the area, as well as like just really good places to go and find a drink. Like I recently went to Schumrick and Lay's, and they have really good beer there. I mean, they're a distillery, so of course they would have really good alcohol there.
What are people cooking at home who are new to it? What are some of these things they're trying?
Oh my goodness. I have been obsessed with chicken. But okay. That's just me. I also cook a lot of beef, but that's just because my boyfriend really likes beef. And it's been beef and chicken, but that's just been my experience.
Look, I've lived in the same apartment for 5 years, and the stovetop has never been on. I've not even boiled any water, and the oven has only been used for frozen pizza. Julie, don't look at me like that. Come on. But Julie, you've been writing about wining and dining in Cincinnati. By the way, that's the booze kind of whining, not the other kind of wining, not the sad kind of
wining. I try not to do that.
Whining and dining in Cincinnati here for a long time.
Yes.
And in general, how do you feel about Cincinnati and Northern Kentucky's food and drink scene?
We have an excellent and underrated food and drink scene. We've got everything from fine dining to local dives. We've got and everything in between. Whether you're looking at areas like Northern Kentucky with Covington and their great food scene, Newport coming up, going to downtown and OTR, and even into the suburbs, we're getting some really great stuff all around the city, which is fantastic for all of us.
Absolutely. Okay, Julie, Carly, before you guys came in, I asked you all to think up some of the best places for romantic Valentine's dates. So, Carly, start with you. What are some of your ideas?
This is kind of on me, but like the Cincinnati Art Museum. I think that's very romantic, but I just really like art. That are like the Crone Conservatory. It's like around the same area. Like, that's romantic.
Yeah, that is.
Yeah.
Okay, very cool. Julie, what were some of the ideas that you came up with?
Well, you know, I'm probably going to lean more towards restaurants and bars here.
Of course.
Thank you. Soto is basically the most romantic restaurant in the city, but a great place to go for drinks or even just food at the bar is Orchids, which is not that far away from Soto, actually. And, you know, otherwise, one of my very favorite places for a semi-romantic drink is Longfellow in OTR.
Yeah.
They're actually doing kind of a fun thing on Valentine's Day where they're doing, like, homemade pasta. And then they're doing a special, which is a pink squirrel, which is a creme de noyau, which is like an almond pink drink. And apparently they're going to play very sad romantic songs on vinyl. So that is going to be an experience, and you may or may not see me there.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, we may or may not see you there.
Right.
And so you mentioned restaurants and
yes.
bars, mm-hmm. and we also heard a little bit about some landmarks to check out while we're there. So based on that feedback, what are some of the elements just in general here in town that go into making a place special and romantic? Is it lighting? Is it menu? Is it environment?
It's mood lighting. You know, you don't want to go to a place that has like bright fluorescent bulbs because that just makes no one look good. And
well, that rules out our offices.
You know,
no dates at 91.7 WVXU.
The studio's not too bad, but and I would also say a menu that is very shareable. So, you know, you don't want something that, you know, it's a small enough portion that only you can eat it. But, you know, hey, baby, sweetie, honey, whatever, would you like to try whatever it is we have? I think that shareables really make for a good romantic experience.
Yeah. And Carly, basically, what are some of the just general overtones of a special place for a date?
Definitely, like, if it has, like, a lasting impact or, you're like, something just kind of sticks out in your mind. I know, like, at least with my boyfriend, we try to do stuff where, like, it's just, it would definitely make a really good memory, and it's like something you can go back to over and over and over again and just kind of like either think about that same memory or just continue making memories.
Very cool. What about Netflix and chill? Is that an acceptable date?
Sometimes.
When like in the beginning of a relationship, like the end of a relationship, like what, like when
part, you don't want to do it at an end of a relationship. That's the last thing you want to do at the end of a relationship.
You don't want to sit in silence binging Game of Thrones because
that could be tragic.
I can guarantee it will be tragic. Absolutely. I do want to share some statistics about Netflix that were sent out by highspeedinternet.com. I don't even know if that's a reputable site, but they sent out some fun sites. 1/3 of people surveyed say they use their ex's Netflix password. Is that an acceptable practice, do you think?
No, use your parents. That's what I do.
Some of our parents don't have Netflix.
Well, I think if you're somebody who can't afford $13 a month, that you probably understand why you're an ex.
I get it free with my cell phone. I mean.
So almost 1 in 10 people surveyed say they've dated someone just to use their Netflix subscription.
Who are these people?
I don't know who these people are. These are millennials, by the way, who do this more than any other age group. 29% of those surveyed say they've gotten into a verbal argument over what to watch on Netflix. Okay, so when you're dating somebody and, you know, you have all these options of what to watch now more than any time in history. How do you handle that when you're in a relationship? You're both in relationships, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
So this may be something you've had to encounter. How do you figure out what to watch?
At least with my boyfriend and I, we try to find something that we both like. Lately, we've been watching more Hulu than Netflix, but it's kind of the same vein. So like if he really wants to watch something that's more action-y, I'm like, I'm not the mood. But like if we find something that's because we both like comedy and we'll end up watching that, like we binge watch Future Man on Hulu, and that's something we both enjoy.
So you compromise. You find a way to compromise. And Julie, how do you deal with that? Are you kind of the boss? Do you decide what's going on?
It's like you know me or something.
Well, that lipstick says you're the boss.
Well, thank you. I'm glad we didn't wear the same color. Actually, we tend to listen to more music while, you know, we're on the couch. So we'll like play board games and listen to music because that's what we do now. But Netflix, if we can't decide, we just watch Deadpool.
Oh.
Yeah, I think I've watched it like 15 times. You can kind of like not pay attention to it or pay attention to it. That's kind of our default. But
yeah.
We actually need a show to binge. So if anybody has any suggestions, I will take them.
All right. This same survey, when asked if they'd rather give up sex or streaming TV for 1 year, 30% of the people say they'd give up sex to be able to stream their favorite TV show. So that's how that says a lot about what's coming out of Hollywood. It's really good era for.
Wow.
But that concludes our portion of Netflix and chill in terms of dating. So we're talking about people who have dates and who might watch these shows together, who might go out to some of these fun places together. But we also have to talk about the people who are alone. And before we get to that, I want to remind you that you're listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm joined today by Julie Neeson of Wine Me, Dine Me, also a WVXU contributor, Carly Kortz, a writer from Date Night Cincinnati. And joining us now, Rachel Appenfelder. She's a professional mascot.
Yeah.
And public relations event director, and is also remembered as the 2016 Bockfest Sausage Queen. Thank you for being here today.
Absolutely.
Okay, so I went looking for someone single to come in on the show and to talk about this experience, and you volunteered.
I sure did. Absolutely.
So you're a single lady.
I sure am.
Why?
Julie and I were actually talking about this at lunch yesterday. I'm at a point where I am choosing to be single.
What does that mean, to choose to be single?
Act of choice. I've dated. I've been married. I'm divorced.
Okay.
I've been on dates with plenty of people, and it just never kind of fit. So I'm at a point where I'm like, okay, I'm going to work on myself. I'm going to, you know, choose to be single and really get to know what I like, you know, because sometimes in relationships you kind of morph into that other person where you're like, well, do I really like baseball as much as I thought I did, or – which I do. I realize I do. And it's kind of fun to go to Reds games without somebody. So, you know, just do I like the art museum as much as I thought? Because we used to go to the art museum, but do I like it because I like it or do I like it because he liked it? So that's been kind of a interesting journey I've been on. You know, being single is tough, especially older single versus younger single. A lot of apps are available now where you can try to find that somebody, and they're very frustrating.
I want to dive into that a little further, but first I want to read a message that we got from a listener. Kendall expressed sort of similar frustration. She wrote, "Dating in our region is very difficult. Cincinnati is still very conservative in that people get married in their high school to their high school sweethearts at a very young age. It's hard to find someone young and single, and I don't know, has a job." She said,
yes.
She added that the dating apps have made it worse, as people never want to meet in person,
right,
or they're only looking for a hookup. And then one listener sent a screenshot from a dating app saying, quote, "This is what we're dealing with." And so it's a screenshot of a man that she was talking to. He says he's looking for a dink. D-I-N-K, it stands for apparently dual income, no kids. That's the kind of relationship that he's looking for. And he says, quote, he wants a woman who makes $100,000 a year and babies may come later. But he spelled babies B-A-B-Y-S. And so the comment from the listener who sent this in says, he wants to date someone who owns a home and makes six figures, but he can't spell babies correctly. So that's
he totally lives in his mom's basement. yes, that's what happens.
What is the experience on these apps? First, for those of us who don't know, what are some of the apps? I'm sure that all of you are at least familiar in passing.
Tinder. OkCupid, Bumble. Match.
Plenty of fish.
Yes.
eHarmony.
My gosh. E-Harmony.
There's so many.
And that's just for
For straight people.
That's for straight people.
Grindr for our gay friends.
Uh-huh. Scruff.
Scruff is a gay. But these are basically apps on your phone where in some way or another you're scrolling through profiles and swiping or clicking and talking.
It's exhausting.
Okay. And they're hyper-local, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they are based on the your location and where other people are. So as we're talking about dating in Cincinnati and Northern Kentucky, it doesn't get any more specific than that, because we're talking about how close they are to your physical presence at that moment in time.
Right. You can see if they're like 30 feet from you, which is really super creepy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
you have been at the same restaurant as this person. Oh, thank you. Okay.
That's information that they provide to you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It used to be that, I guess it was Tinder, had like which friends you had in common and they have like which like pages you like in common. It's a little weird.
So, Rachel, you say you're taking a break from dating, but you've used these apps. So
I have, yeah.
Are you using them currently?
No.
You don't even take a peek?
It's a love-hate relationship. You know, you're like, okay, I haven't been on it in a while. Let me see what's out there. And then you realize it's the same exact stuff.
Yeah, so what's out there in Cincinnati?
Oh, okay. Well, first of all, a lot of problems myself and a couple of friends have had are that people, you know, use pictures from 10 years ago. You actually end up meeting these guys out, and you're like, you don't look like your picture.
How many pictures do you have to request before you meet? Do you need to see, like, some variety of angles?
I mean, at this point, I'm like, can you hold up today's Enquirer? Because I want to know that this is a current picture. You know, it's not that bad, but sometimes. Or, you know, hey, there's a whole show about catfishing, like where people use people's pictures. Yeah. And it's sometimes dating's, I mean, super scary. You know, you expect to meet somebody and, hey, public place all day long. Please do not Uber to their house or somewhere. That's also.
2 o'clock at a coffee shop and then in broad daylight.
Broad daylight.
Yeah.
Is that the advice you would give? You want to make sure that, like, the first encounter is somewhere that's very public.
Absolutely. Drive separate. Drive separate or Uber separate.
Okay.
I would recommend, just because you don't know this person.
Yeah.
I mean, online, we all know how online is. And, you know, if you feel uncomfortable, you need a way out.
Mm-hmm.
You need a way out. And if it's going great, awesome. But you always have to have that backup plan in place, or, you know, your friend ready to call and say that there's an emergency so you can skip town.
And I've had this conversation with my girlfriends, too, where they only go to places where they're kind of a regular, so that if something happens, like the bartender or a server or somebody that they know there kind of has their back.
That's a really good point.
Yeah.
I went on a blind date to Fretboard. And I told the bartender, hey, I'm on a blind date, blah, blah, blah. And he was my buddy. Like, at the end of the day, I got his number instead of the guy I went on the date with.
Nobody saw that coming. Anybody who's seen a romantic comedy or a Lifetime movie saw that coming all the way around the corner.
Right. He was the, excuse me, arm over the shoulder. Oh, he didn't work out. That's unfortunate. I'll buy you beer because I'm serving it. So that was great.
So, Carly, at Date Night Cincinnati, have you guys covered anything about, like, these apps or meeting this way or how to do a first date?
I mean, there's definitely like dating tips on Date Night Cincinnati. But currently I have not written anything about dating apps. I have never used a dating app. I'm 22 and I feel like that's kind of a unicorn kind of thing.
Yeah, I've never used one either. I don't.
You haven't? Oh.
No.
And like, I know there's algorithms involved, but I'm just like, do I really trust math to set me up with my one true love?
It is the subject area that betrays us the most, isn't it?
It does.
All right, if you want to weigh in on this conversation, what's dating like for you in your neck of the woods here in Greater Cincinnati and Northern Kentucky? Give us a call at 513-419-7100. Email talk at WVXU.org. Leave a comment on our Facebook page or tweet at us. We'll try to get some in the show. Kareem in Covington tweeted, "It's very difficult for a black gay man to date in this area. He says sometimes you find a gem, but not very often." When we asked on Twitter earlier how difficult it is to date around here, and tweeted back, "How much time do you have?"
Accurate.
Joe tweeted, "Dude, it's been difficult for me since I first hit puberty." Alan tweeted at us his suggestion for the best romantic date night in the city. He says Boca. Good choice.
Very good choice.
Greg tweeted that he's currently dating Netflix, so there's Netflix back in the conversation.
Oh, Greg.
Eileen tweeted at us, "The Palm Court Bar is the most beautiful room in town, incredibly romantic for drinks, whether you're looking to meet someone or you're already in a relationship." And we got a call from Tom. He says that Arnold's downtown is his favorite place.
That's a classic. That is a great place.
It doesn't get any more classic than that in Cincinnati. Another question. Whatever happened to singles bars? Are those still a thing? Are these things that happen anymore?
I feel like those are places that they're regular bars that just happen to have a whole lot of singles who go there. We were talking in the lobby about what some singles bars were around town, and it really depends on the neighborhood.
100%. 100%. Different areas have different, you know, we were talking about the Firehouse Grill in Blue Ash. If you are a single woman, 20 to 30, and you want to meet an eligible bachelor, go to Firehouse Grill. Sounds crazy. Well, you know, but there are a lot of reps that are there that are in town. Ethicon's right there. They all just seem to hang out there. I was meeting a girlfriend there for drinks, and we were one of five women there versus 20 to 30 guys that were there having drinks and with their buddies that were single.
So this is Blue Ash. So you're talking about like a lot of business types.
Yes, business types. So yeah, if you're in that mode and you want to look for those kind of guys, you know, but also downtown. I mean, OTR and that kind of thing. People
like
get
all of OTR.
Yeah, all of OTR. You can go. Happy hour is a really good spot to meet people. Like it really is. It's pretty casual. You know, you're there with a lot of coworkers, so you kind of have somebody there with you. We talked about that. You know, but there's each area in Cincinnati is unique. We all know that.
Yeah.
And it depends on the type of person that you want to meet is where you can kind of pick where you want to go.
So when you pick where you want to go, if you find you're part of town, if you just want to hang out in your neighborhood, or if you're willing to take an Uber across town somewhere and you're single, what do you expect of the environment? What's an attractive environment for a single person in this town?
I would say, you know, music in the background so that you, when you're having conversations with people, you know, four people over can't hear exactly what you're saying, you know, where you can make those connections with people. Good seating that would make it, you know, sometimes if you just have a long bar, that's difficult because the seats are taken and you can't sit next to somebody. But if they have kind of an open spot where you can stand, I mean, that's always nice.
Seats, period. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, because standing up for 2 hours trying to talk to somebody and, you know, get snippets of their life is kind of difficult and you want to sit down for that. Good drinks, you know, something sometimes places like he brought up Arnold's. A lot of history there. You can talk about all the different things that go on at that place and just talking points, things that are there that you can then talk about.
And they've got a pretty famous bathtub there, right?
They sure
do. Just in case you ran out of time on your way to this place, you take a quick rinse.
Just quick rinse upstairs and pop down for your date. Absolutely.
So if you go out by yourself
and
you do all the necessary precautions in terms of letting people know your situation, but you're there to just maybe meet somebody on the fly.
Yeah.
What's your demeanor supposed to be? Should you be scrolling your phone? Well, should you be sipping a certain drink? Is there like a colored umbrella?
30 flirty and ready to mingle, or 30 flirty and single? Yeah. From 13 going on 30.
Oh, right.
You just, if you're going out to meet people, I mean, if you want to be on your phone, do that at home. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, you have to look like, okay, I'm ready to engage in a conversation. I'm approachable. You know, of course, we all go to our phones and we're noses in the phone. I get that. But be aware of the situation. Like, you could have been on your phone and, you know, the door opened and this really nice, amazing guy walked in and you totally missed it because you were Facebooking with friends talking about how you hate being single. You know, that's crazy.
So, Rachel, in 2016, you were the Bachfest sausage queen.
I sure was.
Do you wear the sash out? Is that something that helps?
Yeah. And my dad's super proud of that title, by the way. So, yeah, no, everybody's like, oh, the sausage queen. I'm like, yes, I can. I'm really good with sausage. No. It's usually a good line to go to on the first date. So, no.
Well, speaking of sausage, something you can buy at a grocery store. And I remember hearing back in the day, there were a lot of stories about
Hyde Park Kroger.
You could meet at the Hyde Park Kroger.
Love Kroger.
Is this still a thing? Is this still a...
Isn't there something that involved pineapples? Like, if you had a pineapple in your cart, you were like, seriously, I've heard.
What?
Yeah. Oh, that was like one of the
never heard
one of
this.
The clues.
That was a clue.
What do I need to put in my cart? I need to know.
Apparently a pineapple.
A pineapple. Okay.
I don't know if that's actually true, but I have heard that before.
All right, Rachel, so you're a single girl.
Yes.
It's Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
Well,
are you going to be sad about it?
No.
Okay, because I mean, some people call it Singles Awareness Day. Like, what about me? I'm alone.
Right. I mean, it is so an in your face, you don't have anybody kind of moment. And I know the doctor was touching on that loneliness kind of thing. And you really realize because everybody's going out to all these fabulous places and doing all this stuff and going to dinners. Well, why can't you take yourself out? Why can't you go pick to go to Via Vitae and have a great dinner with yourself? And maybe not on Valentine's Day. Because then if you are having a problem where you are, you know, kind of feeling bad about yourself, don't go to places where you know it's all couples, because that's hard. Being single and then wanting to be with somebody, it's hard to be around all couples. So, you know, you can choose to do that. If you're lonely, don't stay home. You know, go do something where there may not be couples. Like you said, the art museum. Mm-hmm. There's plenty of people walking around that aren't with people.
And there are a ton of events going on Valentine's Day itself for people who are single that are just like, you know, relationship neutral.
Yeah.
Queen City Radio has the
speed dating.
Speed dating.
Yeah.
Because I didn't.
And we've only got a little bit of time left. Has anyone done that?
We were talking about that here
at the office. Is that something that you've done?
No.
I'm going to.
You're going
to
do it.
Just for fun. I just want to see what it's about. You know, I got my 30-second spiel. I'm ready. Like, let's go.
Well, I hope it works out. Keep the sash at home just this once. Let's see how it goes.
Just wear the crown.
Can I keep it in my purse just in case?
You can wear the crown, I suppose, if it matches everything.
It does.
Great chat. I really appreciate all of you being here. So thank you to Julie Neeson, to Carly Kortz, and to Sausage Queen Rachel Appelfelder. We really appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstrow. You can find archives of our program online at wvxu.org. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition. Thank you for that. I'm Michael Monks.